The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hi, everyone. Nice to see you all. The last 2 weeks with the Warriors game, attendance was very light. So it's nice to see you all back. One of the terms used to describe the Buddha is that he knew the world. He was a knower of the world. The term in Pali is lokavidu. Loka means world, and vidu means something like knowing or understanding. So he's understood to be someone who understood the world. That sounds good, but what is it that he meant by world? In another place, he said that what he meant by the world was what arises in this body and mind. And so his definition of the world was basically the world of experience, our own inner world of experience. And so we might each think that we're already an expert in our own understanding, our own inner world of experience. How could we not be an expert in our own inner world of experience? And yet this is exactly in the Buddha's journey, his discovery, that there are so many ways in which we fool ourselves about this world of experience, ways in which we confuse various parts of that world together. And so the kind of clarity of actually understanding what is happening in this mind and body was the Buddha's quest, the Buddha's curiosity about what is it in this mind and body that creates suffering, that creates struggle, that creates stress, that creates dissatisfaction, that creates unease. Why do human beings, given that we all wish to be happy, why are we not happy? What's going on in this world of experience by which this unhappiness happens? And I would like to propose to you that it's within this very, I said just a few minutes ago that we would think we would all be experts in our own world of experience, but there are ways in which we don't clearly see or understand our own experience. We don't clearly know what's happening in our hearts and minds. There's so many ways in which we deceive ourselves, or we have, I mean, we know this in a way. We know that there are times that we just, like, we don't want to go there. We don't want to know something. We push it aside, or we're kind of operating on autopilot and not really present for what's happening here. You know, we're driving down the freeway, and suddenly we're at our exit, and, like, when did we get there? We don't remember large chunks of our experience at times. And so what I'd like to propose is that in this terrain of what we don't understand is where the suffering, where the stress, where the dissatisfaction, where the unease, where that happens. There's another teaching of the Buddha where he is asked by somebody to explain his teachings in brief. And there's a couple of different succinct teachings that have happened in this way, and this is one of them. And the first part of this teaching goes something like, this is how you should train yourself. So this is how you should explore your experience. This is what you should look at. how you should train yourself. He said, in the scene should be only the scene. So in what we take in through our eyes, in how we see the world and what we see through our eyes, we should recognize or train that it simply be what is taken in through our eyes. In the heard is only the heard. So likewise with hearing. In the sensed is only the sensed, and the sensed of sense, physical sense, our body senses, our smell and our taste. Within that realm, only the sensed. And within the cognized, within the realm of the mind, only the cognized. In the seen should be only the seen, in the heard only the heard, in the sensed only the sensed, in the cognized only the cognized. This is how you should train yourself. In our more familiar language for this, we could say that the term, are you familiar with the term bare attention? This is a term that's kind of been out there. It was coined, I think, by maybe Nyanaponika coined it. It's basically just the sense of, can we know our experience at the level where we're being contacted with our sense base, with our senses. So when I touch this glass, there's the sense of coolness and hardness and pressure and smoothness. That's the experience of this glass. That's like in the sensed, only the sensed. Just that. In the seen, only the seen. Just seeing. When I look out and see, I'm seeing the forms and colors in this room and people in the room. There's an awful lot. It's a one thing that we can recognize when we look out at a room full of people is that very often we're not really simply seeing the bare sense of meeting just a room of people. We may have all kinds of ideas and opinions and views about what we're seeing. And so that's where the filters or the ideas kind of come in between our sense experience and what we are experiencing. So in the seen is only the seen means that we explore, actually, not trying to somehow not have the opinions and views and ideas and likes and dislikes and emotions about what's happening. You know, when we hear things, we hear, maybe when you heard the train before, you some of you may have had a sense of liking the sound. Some of you may have had a sense of not liking the sound. The liking or not liking of the sound isn't the bareness of the sound. The sound is just the pitch and the tone of the sound. The liking or not liking of it is something that's happening individually in all of us. And so it's a little bit extra, the liking or not liking of that sound. But the idea here, in terms of in the seen is only the seen and the heard is only the heard, the training of this is not to try to say, okay, I'm just going to hear sound and I'm not going to like it or not like it. But rather to notice the many other things that are happening for us around all of our sense experiences. And so this is some of what I'd like to explore with you tonight. What is it that keeps us from just actually meeting experience in this very simple way? And this is the, you know, typically when we meet experience, when we see something, we find it pleasant or unpleasant. We like it, we don't like it. We have opinions and judgments and views and emotions about it. Just about almost anything, we'll have judgments or views or opinions. It's like, you know, it's like we can't walk through the world without endlessly judging things or having ideas or opinions about things. And so this endless stream of commentary and emotional reactivity to what we're experiencing, that is where we tend to find ourselves struggling. If we just even think about a very simple thing, such as, you know, we're walking down the street and we see something that we don't like. We don't like it, we get maybe angry about it or frustrated about it. Right there, in that anger or that frustration, there's already a sense of contraction and already a sense of things are wrong, something's off here. And so this exploration is not to try to cut out our emotions. This can sometimes be a misunderstanding of this exploration. But to recognize, so in the scene is only the scene. What I'm seeing is perhaps a piece of trash on the ground. That's in the scene is only the scene. In the cognized is only the cognized. With that seeing of that piece of trash comes an idea. Somebody dropped that on the ground. Somebody was not respectful of the community to leave that piece of trash on the ground. Now, those kinds of thoughts we don't often recognize or see. We are just immediate. So we have that thought, somebody dropped that on the ground, somebody was disrespectful of the community, and then we react to that thought. We may get angry, particularly if we've seen somebody do it, we've seen the person do it, we may get angry at that person. And so there's an emotional response that arises. The exploration here can be, oh, okay, in the scene is only the scene would be, oh, there's something there. In the cognized is only the cognized is to recognize, ah, there's a thought, opinion that's arising here. There's an idea that's happening. There's an emotion that's happening now. Very often in our lives, we are wandering through our day at the mercy of our mind states, at the mercy of our emotional reactions, at the mercy of our ideas and opinions, without knowing that they're happening, without knowing that they're running us, that they're creating all of this contraction and confusion and anger in our hearts and minds. And so the Buddha was asking us to explore this. I mean, typically what we might think is we see somebody drop the piece of trash, and we simply feel, we just feel the anger, and we are just, you know, we don't even question how this is all put together. We don't even question it. We just simply react. So this exploration of how do we begin to see, how do we begin to meet experience in a more wiser way? How do we start to recognize what's actually going on in our minds and bodies? One of the ways to explore this is to begin to see if we can tease apart what's happening in our bodies from what's happening in our minds. So the Buddha talked, so in this teaching, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed. All of that part is related to the physical body. Those relate to sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touch. So those are the sense impressions that come in through our physical senses. And the cognized is only the cognized, is the sense impressions or the impressions that come in through our mind. Those are ideas, emotions, thoughts, opinions, views, all of that, perceptions. So to begin to recognize, and the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized, it can be interesting to begin to see if we can tease apart or begin to recognize how we tend to mix these all up. How do we, in seeing something, not notice that it's impacting our mind with an emotional reaction? We just assume that, you know, it's like what we assume almost is like, well, somebody does something, and it's like they have the power to create an emotional response in us. We all have this, I think we've got this kind of notion of having buttons that get pushed. You know, a lot of, some of those buttons happen a lot because of the familial kinds of trainings, you know, the familial ways that we were brought up. And, you know, in family situations, it's so easy to get reactive. And it's just as if, it's as if our brothers or sisters or siblings, like, have the power to just push a button and, you know, watch a reaction occur. Well, this happens, this can happen because we are not aware of what's going on. We conflate our experience. And so this is a little bit of the terrain that I want to explore tonight. How to begin to tease apart what's happening in the body and what's happening in the mind. As we begin to get familiar with what the actual body experiences are, so we begin to get familiar with what it actually means to feel the body, vibration and tingling and pulsing and aching and pressure and heat and coolness. We begin to understand what it means to hear a sound, just the pitch and the tone, or to see form and color. So we begin to understand that that's what's happening at the eye and at the ear and at the body here. Then we start to see that so much of what we're experiencing is actually happening in our minds. And that's where the reactivity happens. So let's explore this a little bit. So in the body, let's just feel into the body right now. You know, what are you noticing in the body? Pressure, perhaps, of the hips against the chair or cushion or bench. Contact points of the hands. Maybe even feeling into the hand a little bit. You might feel some pulsing or tingling or vibration. There may be the movement of the breath. These are all physical sensations that I'm describing. You maybe can touch into that. And then, what's the strongest? Let yourself connect to whatever is the strongest physical experience in your experience, whatever that is. Do you have a sense of whether that strong physical experience is pleasant or unpleasant? If it's pleasant or unpleasant, is there also, in a sense of, if it's pleasant maybe, of kind of liking it perhaps, maybe appreciating it or wanting it to continue? If it's unpleasant, is there a sense of not liking it, wanting it to go away? So all of those things are happening in the present moment, but very often with the physical sense, we quickly assume, or like, you know, if you're sitting and you've got a kind of a little pain in your knee, it's like, my knee hurts. That's what we think our experience is. My knee hurts is our experience. That experience is got a lot of components to it. There's the sensations that are happening in the knee, perhaps a pressure or aching or pulling or twisting or burning. So there's those sensations. And then there's the unpleasantness of those sensations. And then there's an idea about the unpleasantness, that this is a problem and that it has to go away. So all of that is happening. And the vast majority of that is in our mind. The pleasantness, the unpleasantness is actually a mental experience. That can be hard to see. How might I point this out to you? So, imagine that you are on a busy street corner. You are waiting for a friend to come. And, there's a lot of people coming by, a lot of people coming and going. And while you're there, at about the time that your friend is supposed to arrive, you feel a gentle touch on your shoulder. That experience of that touch, because of the context in which you are waiting for a friend, probably in that moment there's the assumption, oh, that's my friend. So that gentle touch, that sense of that gentle contact, might be experienced as pleasant because of the whole situation that's surrounding that event, that contact. Now, imagine you're on the same street corner, same time, only you're not waiting for a friend. You're waiting for a bus. And you feel this contact on your shoulder. For some people, that might be, oh, who's here? Who do I know? But for other people, it might be a startle. Somebody's touching me. I'm not expecting to be touched. And so it might be experienced as unpleasant. So this contact, the pressure is the same. This scenario here is different. And so the idea in the mind, the idea of what we're expecting is different. And that influences whether we're experiencing something as pleasant or unpleasant. Neuroscience actually, I was happy to hear this actually. At some point I was reading about where pleasant and unpleasant happens in, I kind of thought maybe there was something happening on the nerve endings in the body. And well, there's definitely nerve endings in the body, but where the experience of pleasant, unpleasant happens is in the brainstem. It's in the lower part of the brain. If this part of your brain is damaged, you don't experience pleasant or unpleasant as a touch sense. So we can begin to kind of see this. We can begin to recognize this, that experience is pleasant or unpleasant depending on a context. You know, imagine that you are angry with somebody and you are walking down the street. What happens when you're angry with somebody and you're walking down the street? At least I know for me, my mind, if I have a negative mind state, when I'm walking down the street, my mind will start seeing things that I don't like or that I have to be angry about. It's like when I'm in that mood, my mind preferentially will find things to be angry about. If I'm walking down that same street and I'm in a good mood, my mind will preferentially find things to appreciate. And so this too is a way in which in the scene is not only the scene. We think sometimes that when we're walking down a street and taking in sights, that it's just like there's a recorder, like just like a video recorder here taking in information. And yet so much of the information that comes in is coming in preferentially based on the context, based on the state of our minds. And so what we need to explore here is not to try to create some kind of a zombie-like state of mind where we're not experiencing anything and are just like these automaton cameras and audio recorders, but to become aware. Ah, there's anger happening in the mind right now. That would be in the cognized, is only the cognized. Awareness of the state of mind while it's happening. In the cognized is only the cognized. Okay, anger is happening right now. When we are aware of the climate of our minds, when we're aware of what's going on in our minds, then we may have the capacity to be able to, you know, to see actually, to watch how we're preferentially, you know, picking things out of the environment that we have to be angry about. And so we begin to recognize, oh, you know, this state of mind is influencing how I'm taking in information. This is an important thing to know. So we're not simply at the mercy of that state of mind or those conditions. We can be aware of those while they're happening. So we can start to, you know, explore, like, you know, the sensations and get familiar. What are the body sensations? And then begin to recognize kind of the other things that are happening being parts of our mind's response to what's happening. To begin to distinguish those two, to begin to distinguish this is actually what's happening in the body and this is what's happening in the mind. To begin to be able to be clear about that is very powerful. Because without that clarity, we are just walking through the world with a lot of confusion and reactivity based on states of mind that we're not aware of. Another process that's very kind of hard to see, but also also one that we're often not aware of, is the process by which we recognize things. So when we were meditating earlier and the sound of the train happened, there's the sound, just the sound of the train, the horn of the train. And that is its own experience. The sound. But very quickly, the mind will recognize, identify that is a train. The sound of the train and the idea that is a train are two different things. Now, that might seem like a silly kind of, why do we need to know that? Why do I need to know that the sound of the train and the train are different things? Partly because the ideas of what we're experiencing become the shortcut through which we experience things. So, you know, the sound of the train happens, and then there's the idea that it's a train, and then probably because you've experienced lots of trains in your lives, there's all kinds of ideas about trains. What they look like, whether they're good or bad, or whether they're useful or not useful. This is a kind of a silly example, but this kind of thing happens in so many different ways. So there's the sound of the train, and then there's the recognition of the train, the concept, oh, that's a train. And then there's all of the baggage that we carry from our history about trains from the past. All of our ideas, opinions, views about trains. And if we don't recognize that that sound and that recognition, oh, that's a train, are different, then what we're probably doing is relating to that experience, relating to the sound, not through the bare experience of just the sound, but through the whole history of our relationship to trains. This becomes more potent when we start seeing it impact our relationships with each other. You know, maybe we see somebody walking down the street that looks like or has a similar body shape to somebody who has been mean to us in the past. And so there's the sight. And the scene is only the scene is just there's the sight. But very quickly, the perception of that person reminds me of this other person may bring in so much baggage and reactivity that there's no way for us to meet that person fresh. There's no way for us to meet that person just from the perspective of this is a new person, because we're carrying so much of, and we may already have a pounding in our hearts and a feeling of fear and constriction, or a feeling of bracing that this person's going to be mean to me, even though we consciously know this is a different person. Have you seen this kind of thing? This kind of thing happen? Are you familiar with this kind of mechanism in our minds? And so this is the reason, or one of the reasons why it's helpful to begin to distinguish. Okay, there's the sound, there's the sight, then there's the perceptions that come along with it, and the associations that come along with that perception. And if we are not aware of that, then again, we're at the mercy of our habits, of our conditioning, of our the whole history of our lives comes into play in the present moment unless we are conscious of it, unless we're aware of our predispositions to be reactive or judgmental or believe certain things. So another place to begin to tease apart the body and the mind. Just these explorations. So I want to see if there's any questions or comments about what I've said. This is not a simple topic, and yet it's so important for us to recognize that we can be walking through the world without clearly seeing what's going on in our minds. Maybe even just a couple examples. Maybe we could start with just a couple examples of things that kind of came up for people as I was talking around. Yeah, over here.
When is this on? Okay, yeah. When you mentioned about pain, I was thinking whether it's unpleasant or pleasant. I thought, well, it seems like it's always unpleasant. Perhaps we add on to it. That's the only thing. Can you talk a little bit more about relation to pain?
Yes. So this is a huge area of seeing how these all get mixed up. This is a really great example of starting to see how all of these different, the physical experience and the mental experience all get mixed up. So if we do have some kind of physical experience of pain, of unpleasant sensations, say, you know, we're sitting in meditation. You know, meditation's great for finding experiences that create discomfort. So we are sitting there with maybe a discomfort in our knee or in our back or in our foot or something. And what often happens there is that there's the unpleasantness. There's the sensation. There's the twisting or the pulling or the stabbing or the aching, or maybe it's just a pressure or just a pulsing. So we've got that experience. And then there's probably an unpleasantness. If we're calling it pain, it's probably unpleasant. So there's that piece of it. So there's the sensation, and then there's the unpleasantness. And then there are thoughts about it. What is this? I'm meditating. How much longer am I going to be meditating? Is it another 20 minutes? Am I going to be able to sit that long? If I keep sitting for that long without moving, I'm not going to be able to walk. In fact, it might even cripple me. And so there's all of this mental stuff going on that's around the experience. So there's the physical sensation, there's the unpleasantness, then there's a liking or not liking of it, and then there's a whole bunch of beliefs and ideas and opinions that come in, maybe even anger at the bell that it hasn't rung yet. You know, so there's emotional states that come in. Much of what's happening here, there's the sensations, then there's the unpleasantness, and then there's the not liking, perhaps. Not liking is also unpleasant. And then there's the ideas around, wow, I've got to sit here. I'm just supposed to sit here. And this is such a stupid practice that, well, I have to sit still. Why do they make us sit still anyway? Those ideas are unpleasant. Emotions that come along with it. Anger, for example. That's also unpleasant. And so based on perhaps if you actually start looking at incensed is only the sensed, a fairly perhaps, I mean, I have seen at times the actual sensation when I get down to it is actually not very painful itself. But the state of mind is just like so uncomfortable because of all of the mental reactivity. It's like there's the physical sensation, which may not be terribly painful, with all of the mental reactivity. It's like they don't just add up. It's like the mental reactivity multiplies way over many more times the physical experience and makes the entire experience seem intolerable. And so sometimes in that space, with all of the reactivity, all of the anger, all the frustration, all the tightening in the, I'm just going to sit here, I'm not going to move, I'll be a good meditator, I'll show them, you know, all of that tightening and pressure and tension is adding that the mental side of it is multiplying the unpleasantness. And then perhaps bodily tension is also exacerbating the unpleasantness. And so we see, when we see all of this together, the mind added in, all of the mental unpleasantness, makes the entire experience seem like you're going to just die if you don't move. So and actually it feels like at times that the pain is like way worse than it actually is because of all this mental reactivity. And so a really helpful approach here is, again, see if you can tease apart. Okay, yes, there is this physical sensation. What is that? Okay, well, there's some pressure there. But boy, there's this frustration and this anger. Okay, that's happening too. What's that feel like? Can you hang out with what it feels like to be frustrated or angry? That would be in the cognized as only the cognized, knowing that. Anger's happening right now. Frustration's happening right now. What I've seen when I like take my attention out of the pain here and just recognize, okay, frustration's happening right now, anger's happening right now. Sometimes, not always, sometimes there can be reactivity to that too. You know, we can like pile it on. But sometimes I can actually go, oh, right, frustration, that's what's happening right now. Okay, I can hang out with frustration. I can know frustration and feel that, you know, it impacts the body in various places, so feeling into that. And then as I can feel into the frustration or anger as separate from the physical experience, I may begin to have a clearer recognition, a clearer sense of what the actual physical sensation is. Oh, actually, it's a little bit of a pressure and maybe a little pulling. slightly unpleasant. But what's really unpleasant is the reactivity in the mind. And so that begins to help us to see that so much of the suffering in that situation is not actually because of the physical experience, but it's because of our mind's reaction to it. Now, there are times when we do actually have very strong pain. And I'm not saying that you should never move in meditation, you know, if you have a physical pain. It can be really helpful to begin to distinguish when those physical sensations are actually a sign, yes, it's time to move right now. You know, that it's not, mindfulness meditation does not preclude moving while meditating. In mindfulness meditation, we can recognize, yes, that sensation, and hopefully having done a little bit of the exploration of pulling apart, teasing apart, what's the actual physical sensation from the reaction? Yes, there is reaction. Okay, yep, I can see the reaction part, and I can, wow, yeah, that is actually really painful. You know, I had sciatica, and you know, there was a particular sensation of the pressure on my sciatic nerve. It was like when that sensation started, it was a clear sign. This is time to move. And so, you know, I, recognizing that, I could distinguish, okay, yes, this is the body saying it's time to move. I don't have to get into a whole snit about it. I can simply recognize that and use wisdom to move the body. So the important part here, as I'm pointing to, is teasing apart what is the physical, you know, in the sensed is only the sensed. And what is the mind's relationship to it? Not to try to stop the reactivity or to you know, somehow repress it or like turn it off. Sometimes we think, oh, if I've noticed that I'm angry, I should be able to stop being angry. Well, that doesn't seem to work. But we can notice anger is happening right now. And the shift of the power in the mindfulness to recognize anger is happening right now versus being caught in the anger and believing the anger and being just driven by the anger, there's a vast difference between those two. A very simple shift of the mind to recognize, oh, what's happening right now is there's anger or frustration. So that's in the cognized, it's only the cognized. So does that speak to your question? Is there something more you'd like to ask about that?
Yeah, that was helpful. I like how you gave detail of every aspect of it, because that's exactly what I was experiencing. Like, yeah, there's just so many things. And I was thinking, like, well, which one would I focus on more? Mm. And, well, it seemed like it might have been, like, unpleasant in general. This whole thing's unpleasant. So
the unpleasantness was kind of the big picture. That was the easiest thing to check into.
Yeah.
So it's helpful, I think, in this kind of exploration, rather than saying, I'm going to focus on this or this, to be aware that there's a lot going on and there's a lot of feedback loops happening. And so if you can kind of step back and recognize, okay, yep, wow, there's unpleasantness, and then also recognize, oh, and there's frustration, okay, oh, and there's, boy, that pain in the knee just got really strong, okay. So just kind of see how they all interplay. You might find one of the things you can see when you watch that is you might see if there's a flare-up of the anger, there's going to be a flare-up of the unpleasant. If the anger diminishes, you might find that the overall unpleasantness diminishes. So you begin to see the relationships between how they're all feeding back into each other. And that's very powerful to see that, because when we see the connection between the mental reactivity and the entirety of the unpleasantness, and we see that actually that's a choice in the mind. It's the mind that is doing that. That information of This is an interesting thing. You know, it's not that we choose. It's not that we can choose to say, "Oh, I see that the anger makes things worse. So that therefore it's not very useful, and I should stop it." But what we do get to see with mindfulness is that the anger exacerbates the pain situation. And because we're seeing that with mindfulness, the mind learns that in a different way. And as we might see, you know, if the anger diminishes, we see, oh, when the anger diminishes, the whole experience is less. And that is also learning. So, you know, it's not that we can choose to turn off a reaction, but when we're mindful of our reactions, it's like the mind is getting new information. It's getting wise information about how the mind can begin to move towards more a sense of well-being. The mind, I think, inherently wants to move in the direction of well-being, but there are some fundamental ways that we do not see, that there's like this disconnect or this delusion or not seeing. Like when we're just in the reactivity of anger to pain, we are not seeing that the reactivity is exacerbating the situation. We're just reacting and trying to fix the situation or control it. And so when we open to it with mindfulness, we get a different bit of information there. We see, oh, when that anger flares, it actually doesn't help things. When the anger diminishes, the mind can make a more wise choice about what actually needs to happen here. So the mind, our system, our mind-body system gets better information when we are able to be present and watch how all of these forces interact with each other. Typically, we're not watching how they interact. We're just kind of charging based on our reactions. And when we do that, we're not able to see that so much of those reactions are actually making things worse for us. You know, sometimes we think that if I didn't have reactions, I wouldn't do anything in the world. You know, we have this belief, if I'm not angry or self-righteous or frustrated, why would I do anything? If I'm always just happy and peaceful and at ease, why would I do anything? There's a motivation of compassion. There's a motivation that comes from joy. There's a motivation that comes from wisdom. There's a motivation that comes from generosity. There's a motivation that comes from wishing well in the world. And so when we let go of our reactive emotions, what we find is there's this wealth of beautiful emotions that can motivate us too. So we don't end up just like, you know, sitting like lumps on a log. When we're not reactive, we actually move in a beautiful way through the world. And this begins to be possible for us as we start to separate out and tease apart the ways in which our minds and bodies feed back to each other. So thank you for the question. That was a helpful clarification. Another comment or, yeah, behind you, Kurt. I think it's not. Oh, let's use the other one. That is working, yes.
So this is very interesting and actually resonates quite strongly with something that I recently came to realize. I've been passing through a period of extreme busyness under several high deadlines and many, many duties. And finally, after a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, things were starting to calm back down. And I bought a package of chewing gum. And I don't often chew gum, but as I started to chew the gum, the second or third stick, I realized that I was chewing the gum in order to re-stimulate myself back to this state of busyness, intentional busyness, and intentional tension, and intentional even a bit of irritation with the world around me and getting engaged in those thoughts again.
Yeah, it's a habit. It's a habit.
And I was seeking the sensation of the smell and the taste and the chomping away to re-stimulate. And it actually realized that my action was stimulating this re-engagement with this previous period where I was so busy I wasn't even aware
of
all of this.
This is a great recognition. What happened when you noticed that?
Well, at first I didn't quite realize it. And then a day or two later, I was chomping away again, smelling the smell, and I suddenly realized, oh, I'm causing yet more tension by this chomping away.
Uh-huh. And then did it shift?
Well, yeah, I shifted, and over the next 3 or 4 days, I realized that every time I picked up the package of gum, started chewing the gum again, I was back into this old state of tension, grumpiness, you know, engaged in all of these other thoughts. So it's very interesting that the sensation was driving this loop. But furthermore, I sought out the sensation in order to re-engage with the old thoughts.
Yes, it's quite amazing how this is part of how I think the mindfulness begins to work, because we see, you know, we see the unsatisfactory nature of the busyness and the agitation and all of that. And yet what we end up watching is our minds actively seeking it out. And when we don't see that, we're just gone. But when the mindfulness is present and can actually watch the process, you begin to have a choice. You begin to be able to say, maybe I should not pick up that gum. So, yeah, thank you for that example. And it's time to stop. So thank you all for your attention.